from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. Today's guest, Red Sox CEO and President Sam Kennedy. We discuss with Sam if the Red Sox can get away from the boom or bust cycle they've been in for the last 9 years. Also, he tells us why it's not fair to call the Red Sox the Fenrays, that being a reference to Chaim Bloom, chief baseball officer, who used to work for the Tampa Bay Rays, operating the Red Sox with the same small market mentality. Also, Sam Kennedy feeling pretty good about there being fans in the stands for the Red Sox this season as soon as opening day, April 1st. And Ellen had a very important question, and she really grilled him about one particular aspect of the Red Sox.
If our listeners know anything, I hope it's that I'm here for the people. I'm asking the hard questions, and I was just very frank with him.
Yes, you definitely were. There's no question about it. You were very frank with him. I think it was really a question that you poured on at the end.
I hope this was a kick in the buns to try to get this burning question to answer. I know I'm not the only fan who is wondering why this injustice is occurring.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was really a moment to relish for the podcast.
So just think of this as a catch up with Sam Kennedy.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good way to think of this interview. So Sam gives you the outlook for the Red Sox, what's going on in spring training right now. They feel pretty good about 2021. I think that maybe they're more optimistic than the rest of us. We'll let Sam tell you why. That's next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, now, as promised, we're joined by Red Sox president and CEO Sam Kennedy. He's coming to us from Fort Myers, Florida, and the Fenway South Complex. Sam, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Chris. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're very happy to have you. I want to start here. It seems like what's coming out of spring training down there is an organization that feels pretty good about the 2021 season, maybe better internally than externally. So I know you guys often have projections about what you can do in best case scenarios internally. In fact, I go back to 2013 and you guys actually exceeded those internal projections. You won 97 games in a World Series. So what is the internal projection right now for this Red Sox team?
Well, it's a great question. You know, a lot of times I point to 2013 when you're talking about offseason projections. The truth is, nobody knows. We don't know. The experts don't know. I hope that we have a team that is competitive in the American League East, which is a tough division, and we can win enough games to get us into the dance in October, because then anything can happen. As you pointed out, back in 13, I think our internal projections had us at 84, 85 games, something like that. And we ended up winning, like you said, 97 and went on to win a World Series. My guess is our internal win projections are probably somewhere consistent with that 2013 modeling that we did. So if that's the outcome, we'll take it. But obviously, you know, we've taken an approach where we're trying to do the impossible, which is balance and respect short-term desires with long-term desires, inherently conflicted issues. And so we're trying to do everything we can to compete this year and invest in the club at the major league level and throughout all baseball ops, but also keep an eye on the longer term as well. Hopefully that strategy will work. And internally, there is a great feeling down here. The return of Alex Cora is where you sort of start on that topic. And he has just been tremendous. We're really, really excited to have him back. And I think the players are, and the front office and the staff are as well. So we're off to a good start and looking forward to getting going.
Along the lines of what you mentioned with sustainability, I know that's a big buzzword, and it was when Chaim was hired as chief baseball officer for this team. How frustrating is it for you guys that for the last 9 years, you've been in this sort of boom or bust cycle? In the last 9 years, you have four last place finishes, including last year, but you have four first place finishes in the AL East and two World Series titles. Really, the only outlier was Alex his last year as manager, 2019, coming off the 2018 World Series, third place finish at 84-78. But otherwise, it's either the best of the best or the worst of the worst. How frustrating is that for you guys that you're sort of stuck in this boom or bust cycle?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I guess it's unknowable to go back and sort of see, you know, what would we prefer, you know, a team that finishes first, second, or third, makes its way into the postseason, doesn't, you know, hoist that World Series trophy at the end, but you have a consistent playoff team. You know, look, the goal is certainly not boom or bust. It is boom all the time. And I think of organizations that we love to hate, but admittedly, we admire and respect. I think about what Brian Cashman has done with the New York Yankees. I think about Andrew Friedman and the Los Angeles Dodgers, you know, building organizations that not only have won World Series, but have consistently been sort of at the top of the division. That is the goal. You know, you don't want to have a period where you're down and you're finishing last. But last year was it really was a disgrace. I mean, we did have injuries, but it was awful to live through a season where we just were out of every game by the top of the second inning. And so to be more consistent, be healthy, and to play at a level where the Boston Red Sox belong has to be the goal. And I would think with Chaim Bloom and Eddie Romero and Raquel Ferreira and Brian O'Halloran, coupled now with Alex Cora and Will Venable and the great coaching staff that we have, coupled with a lot of resources, investing heavily in our major league payroll, which we have this year and we will continue to do. I like our chances for a good, consistent run in 2021 and beyond into the future. That's the goal, and that's what we're expected to do from John Henry and Tom Werner on down. So looking forward to turning the page on 2020. It was ugly. There's just no way around that, and hopefully we'll get off to a good start and stay healthy. That is it's such a cliche, but so true. Health can really help us this year, given we are far deeper, we're more athletic, we have more versatility with respect to our position players. So really looking forward to seeing this new makeup for the Boston Red Sox in 21.
You mentioned that, you know, 2020 was difficult to live through and it was a disgrace. I think a lot of fans felt that way. Do you guys sense the skepticism and even worse than that from a fan engagement level, seeming apathy towards the Red Sox, the likes of which I really haven't experienced in my lifetime? Are you guys aware of that? Can you feel that?
Yeah, I think you do feel, you know, our job is to be connected, to understand how our fans are feeling. I'm fortunate to connect and communicate with our fans on email, on social media. And it's interesting. Sometimes I feel the apathy, but a lot of times I feel the anger. And that's good because that means that there's not necessarily apathy when people are really, really upset, but there's really nothing you can do about it. You can't, yes, you have to be mindful of it. You have to be in touch. You have to be connected. You have to be accountable. We own up to the fact that, you know, a last place finish is not acceptable. And we really need to spend our energy around people that give us positive energy, like our players and our staff, and really come together as a group. And the only way we're going to get this market excited about the team and really into the team is to get off to a good start, play competitive games, play an exciting brand of baseball, do the right things on the field. And I do think the rest will take care of itself. And in many ways, professional sports business is a zero-sum game. You know, a lot of people talk about relevance and, you know, well, it's the way you lost or the way you won. I'm not sure I really buy into that. You need to win. You need to win. You need to win baseball games consistently and be in the mix for October baseball each and every year. And if you do that, and that's the goal now, if you do that, you'll be in good shape and you will be relevant and you will have a fan base. This is the best fan base in sports. We all know that. I mean, we're from here. We can say that with certainty. And our fans deserve championship contending teams. We've had it for 20 plus years and all the teams. And that's where we need to be.
Sam, speaking of fans, there are a few things that I have been looking forward to more post-pandemic, or I guess post-vaccine, than going to Fenway, eating a Fenway Frank, drinking a beer, probably multiple of both, and watching the Red Sox. So Governor Baker was asked recently about when fans may be allowed back into the stadium, with New York and New Jersey announcing that they will be having limited capacity at their games. What are your thoughts? When do you see fans returning back to Fenway?
Well, we are hopeful that the larger venues, whether it's Fenway Park, Gillette Stadium, the TD Garden, Polar Park out in Worcester, which is set to open this year, we hope that we're able to host fans in a safe environment. But be clear, we need to be sure that the state's health officials are comfortable with that. The governor has been great about communicating with us, all the teams, front offices. Lieutenant Governor Karen Pulido has been amazing. She's been very, very connected to the business community. And I know they're working on it. We hope to have word soon. We open on April 1st at Fenway Park, and we really hope we're in a position to welcome fans back. We have submitted protocols, plans, procedures for that to happen. We do not have word yet, but we are looking forward to that coming soon. But we don't have any inside information. We'll see what happens. Hopefully, in the coming days or weeks ahead, we'll be ready to go if we're given that opportunity.
Sam, just to sort of go back to that point. Are you guys planning at this point as if you will have fans on April 1st? Obviously, it's easier to plan to have them, and then if you don't, then to not plan to have them, and then all of a sudden you can. But right now, is it fair to say you're operating with a plan that you would be able to have fans on April 1st?
That's a great question. Yeah, I would say yes. We want to be prepared and be ready with day of game staff and security and all of our employees that make up Fenway Park. We want to be in a position to be ready to go. So we are preparing for that. But I don't want to give the impression that we are overly confident that it will happen, because we truly don't know. And again, Secretary Sutters and Lieutenant Governor Pulido and Governor Baker will make the decision. And then we'll work with the City of Boston as well, with the health officials at the City of Boston, to make sure they bless what our plans would be. It starts with the state, and we'll go from there. But yeah, we're planning just so we're ready. And then if we're not in a position, we'll adjust as we go forward. It does feel, you mentioned feeling before, Chris, it feels vaccination efforts are ramping up and going faster. I'm now hearing from more and more people who have gotten the vaccine. I cannot wait to get the vaccine myself when it's my turn. I'm really excited. My parents are 80 years old, and they were able to get the vaccine. And so I just can't wait until everyone who wants the vaccine can get it.
Would you be surprised if you went through this entire season at Fenway the way you went through last season with no fans? How surprising would that be to you if we get to, late October and you didn't have a single game with fans?
Well, that would be surprising and very disappointing. And I would think it would mean that, unfortunately, something happened with respect to the trajectory of the virus or with the vaccine. So that would be surprising, just given that you've seen fans in stands in other markets. I think 100 plus venues around the United States, and there have not been reports of transmission or outbreaks. I think if you take the proper protocols, you'll be okay. But again, we're in, I hate to use it, uncharted territory, unprecedented, whatever the word is. It's a tricky thing that none of us have ever dealt with before. So we'll follow the science, we'll follow the data, follow the local health experts, and fingers crossed that on opening day, we'll be back together again at Fenway in some form or fashion.
Yeah, I think we would all like to see that. Anything that is sort of a sign of a return to normalcy, I think, is very welcome for everybody at this point in the pandemic. No question about that. I think that's some welcome news. I know you're being circumspect about it, and we don't want to give anybody the wrong impression, but just the idea that at any point this season, fans could be back in the stands at Fenway, I think is certainly some welcome news. I want to talk some more about the team they could be seeing here, and I want to go to some comments that you made to my former colleague at the Boston Globe, Dan Shaughnessy. And, you know, Dan sort of feels a certain way about the approach of the team at this point in Chaim. He feels maybe it's hewing a little too close to what was done in Tampa, which is obviously a very different market with very different resources than the resources of the Red Sox. You were quoted in Dan's column on January 20th as saying, "I think it would be inaccurate to say we are going for it with an all-in approach that perhaps we did prior to 2018 and that title." So how would you describe the approach? If it's not an all-in, you know, let's win the World Series approach, what is the approach?
Yeah, well, let me clarify, because Dan is, you know, he likes to be very cute and compare the Boston Red Sox to the Tampa Bay Rays because Chaim Bloom used to work for the Tampa Bay Rays. So that's a very cute, kind of a simpleton approach and comparison. So I understand why he would make it. However, if you take a step back and you look at the makeup of the 2021 Boston Red Sox and you look at the investments that we've made into this team, I think what Dan thinks about when he thinks about an all-in approach, I think he thinks free agent splash, big long-term commitment, big dollar, you know, a big ticket item. And I understand that. And winning the offseason is a strategy that teams have deployed in the past. What we're trying to do is win in October. And so you've seen a lot of the moves that we've made. They're built to give us versatility around the field with some of the players that we've added. You've got Hunter Renfroe and Franchi Cordero, and you've got Kike Hernandez who've arrived. Guys who can play all over the field and that complement each other really, really well. We've got pitching depth like we haven't seen in some time. Obviously, last year was very difficult. So, you know, making deals with Garrett Richards really helps. Nick Pivetta will be here through the trade, bringing Martin Perez back. You've got Tanner Houck out there really pitching for a spot. Obviously, Chris Sale on the mend. Then you add Adam Ottavino into that bullpen. And all of a sudden, I think you're looking at a very, very different baseball team from 2020. So we're hopeful to be competitive in 21 and get to that postseason. And as we discussed in 2013, you never know what can happen once you get in. But Dan and I were discussing his unhappiness with the organization for not making a quote unquote big splash or a big ticket item. Look, I understand that. And I also understand that it was a frustrating offseason at times because it was a slow moving market for free agents. And that's frustrating for fans. I think a lot of that has had to do with the uncertainty related to the pandemic and the issue we talked about. Will there be revenues to support big ticket signings and the like? But all of a sudden, you look at our roster and the investments that we've made. We will have a payroll. We don't talk about our payroll publicly, but we will have a payroll that is at the top of Major League Baseball, near the top of Major League Baseball at the Major League level. We are making all sorts of investments into our infrastructure, our scouting, our data analytics, our health and medical areas, our nutrition areas, player development. So we're investing and continuing to invest into our baseball operation. And I know it may not be as satisfying to Dan if there's no big ticket, big splashy item. But I guess we would ask for our fans to look at the product on the field. Let's see how we start and where we are towards the end of the season. And hopefully we'll be back where Red Sox fans sort of deserve to have the Red Sox, which is competing for a postseason berth and ultimately a World Series championship.
Something else from that column, you know, you talked about winning that 2018 World Series. You said that the way we built that team, it came at a price and a great and sustainable baseball operation. You're going to have success at the major league level, but you're also going to have a stacked farm system. So you have a core group coming up through the farm system and guys you can use to acquire major league talent. What I would go back to and maybe push back just a little bit on you guys is that you've done that before. When Theo was here, there were big ticket items at the major league level, and there was still a farm system that produced John Lester and Dustin Pedroia and Jacoby Ellsbury. So you can do both things. And I think it's a little jarring for Red Sox fans to see that the biggest contract that Haim has handed out is to Kike Hernandez for 2 years and $14 million, because you look at it and say, one of the great advantages of being the Boston Red Sox is that you have resources that other teams just don't have. And I think the fear is the team moving away from those resources to maybe more of a one-size-fits-all sort of analytical, efficient approach, and maybe turning its back a little bit on a huge advantage it has over other teams, which is an ability to dip into the market and get players. And even if those players don't work out, the team can kind of write off some of those players and eat that money. I know it's not ideal. I know you don't want to do that, certainly as CEO, but you guys can do that in a way where other teams would be absolutely crippled by a bad free agent signing.
Yeah, I think that it's a great question. But I think the premise of that question completely and totally ignores and discounts the investments that we have made and are on our roster right now. Players like JD Martinez, players like Xander Bogaerts, pitcher like Chris Sale, Nate Eovaldi, we made a major commitment to. So I would push back on that premise. And I would say we have major investments this year into this club, into talented, proven, veteran players that have not only the talent, but they've won championships and they know what it takes to win in Boston. So I would push back on that and say we're absolutely doing both. We're investing heavily at the major league level, and we're investing in our minor league system. Now, I know we still are ranked somewhere around 20. Maybe that's, fair, maybe it's not.
Yep.
But I can tell you, in terms of looking at the depth chart and down into the minor league system, things are looking a lot brighter and more optimistic than they were prior to Chaim Bloom's arrival. So while we hope to compete at the major league level, we've also got a burgeoning talent base throughout the minor leagues, with some names that I think you may see at Fenway Park sooner rather than later. Guys like Tristan Casas, guys like Jaron Duran, Peter Downs. So it's really exciting times ahead. And I think you have to look at the whole picture to get a sense of what's going on with the Red Sox. And we're really excited about the direction we're going. And, I think that's the way you need to look at it as you evaluate it. But at the end of the day, we've got to walk the walk. It's easy to talk about it, but we need to perform on the field. And after being here, this is my 20th year with the Red Sox, I know that better than anyone. We need to get it done on the field.
Yeah, you get it better than anybody because you grew up a Red Sox fan. You know that, basically it's a cottage industry around here to not even second guess, but to first guess the franchise.
Well, I thought it was great. Johnny Miller at Haim's press conference the other day, just absolutely lit into him about the irrelevant Red Sox. And then I think he did the same thing with JD Martinez, reminded him of his batting average like two times within 30 seconds. That's what you want. You want guys like Johnny Miller questioning you and guys like Dan Shaughnessy questioning you, because that means you've got the most passionate fans. It's the best baseball market in the country. And if you love baseball and you want to be in the game, this is where you want to be. But it does come with criticism and comments when you go into Dunkin' Donuts in the morning. You got to be ready for the for the barbs back and forth. That's a good thing.
I want to ask you just about what you talked about in terms of passion. And again, you grew up a Red Sox fan. So, it's change is difficult. People really have a hard time seeing some of their favorite players leave. And it's different, obviously, since 1976 and free agency. That does happen all the time. But I think, again, it is a little jarring for Red Sox fans to think about the win dance repeat outfield of Mookie Betts, Andrew Benintendi, and Jackie Bradley Jr. And there's a chance that none of those guys is on the team this year. Obviously, Mookie's been traded, won a World Series. Andrew Benintendi just got traded, and Jackie is a free agent. We'll see what happens there. But do you understand where it can be difficult to accept for fans that, all three of those talented guys are no longer with the team, potentially 2 years after they were really a big part of the core of a World Series winner?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to someone who lost sleep when, Ray Bourque left to go try and win a Stanley Cup championship, or Roger Clemens left us for greener pastures. I mean, it is hard. I totally get it. And it is hard. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, first of all, with Mookie Betts, and I'm not supposed to talk about players on other rosters, but I think it's okay to say you're not going to find three better people than Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., and Andrew Benintendi. That's the other really, really hard part about it. And so it's difficult. So yes, I understand, and change is difficult. And now I think about Alex Verdugo and Hunter Renfrow and maybe JD out there, Franchi out there. We'll see. Let's give these new guys a chance. One of the things that Alex Verdugo, I think if we can get fans back in the stands, this guy was made for Fenway Park. The energy he plays with and the excitement he brings night in, night out. And he did it in an environment where it was brutal. I mean, no fans at Fenway Park. It was torture. And so hopefully it will be a new day when and if we get fans back there. But no, I do understand change is hard, especially when you're talking about players that came up through the system, had success at the big league level, and then ultimately achieved perhaps the greatest Red Sox season in terms of just pure dominance, 2018. You know, we rolled to the postseason and we stepped over the competition in the postseason to win that World Series title. So it's hard when you make change. I do acknowledge that.
How does it work in baseball ops with Heim? Because he is working with and working in collaboration with some very, very talented people, some very, very talented holdovers in Brian O'Halloran, Raquel Ferreira, Eddie Romero. I know Zach Scott is now with the Mets, all very talented people. But normally when you bring somebody in to run your baseball ops, they sort of get to bring in some of their own people. That doesn't really feel like it's the case with Heim. So my question to you, I guess, directly is this like a baseball, you know, Politburo, like in Soviet Russia, where they sit down, the four of them, and come to a consensus? Or if it's one against three and the one is Heim, does Heim get to do what he wants to do?
Yeah, absolutely. He does. Chaim Bloom is in charge of the baseball operation. You know, he is empowered to make the final personnel decisions. Obviously, he and I collaborate on all aspects of the organization in terms of setting budgets and other big organizational issues. And of course, the two of us work directly for Don Henry and Tom Werner and the Fenway Sports Group partnership with Mike Gordon and the partners that we've all been together 20 years, this partnership. But Chaim is, for a young person, he's kind of an old soul. Maybe it's all these years in baseball. I think he's been in the game since 03 or 04. And he's just a really, really bright guy, experienced baseball person, but just a special guy too. He's incredibly kind and empathetic and he listens, but he's competitive as hell. He really wants to win. It gave him great pleasure operating on the budget that he was operating on in Tampa to build the types of teams that he built. But I'm glad you mentioned the team, because he very much believes in a team approach. I've experienced it now for the better part of more than a year. You know, Raquel Ferreira, 20 plus years in our organization. She's now been promoted to under Chaim to executive vice president, assistant general manager. Eddie Romero, same title and position. The two of them really run all aspects of the operation together, working for BOH and Chaim. BOH, another rock in our organization, been here a long, long time. I do think bringing in that outside perspective in Chaim, what was important as we look to develop exactly what you talked about, to get us away from this sort of boom or bust type of environment and hopefully build more of a consistent approach to winning. But he very, very much values the opinions of the men and women in baseball operations that he works with. I also think, and this was sort of the operating premise of bringing Chaim in, to partner him up with Alex Cora, I personally think that these two represent a force. I think they're going to be a wrecking ball in the American League East with the fan support, the resources that we have, experience that Alex brings operating in this market, connectivity with players. I think they're an incredible duo. and really excited to see what they can do now that they've been reunited.
So now that Alex is back, I want to ask you, what did it take for the organization to get comfortable to bring Alex back? And what did it take for Chaim to be comfortable in bringing him back?
Well, first of all, from the organization's perspective, John, Tom, Mike Gordon, our ownership, our partnership, myself in the role as president and CEO, we were very clear from the outset, publicly, privately, that this was ultimately Chaim Bloom's decision. And it was. He ran a process along with his colleagues in baseball operations, and he needed to spend time with Alex. They needed to talk through everything that had happened, everything that went on. And ultimately, Chaim was satisfied with what he heard and determined that Alex was the right guy to lead the baseball operation. Obviously, ownership, myself, we were fully on board with that. Personally, I was extremely pleased with that decision. I have experienced Alex Cora as a member of the Red Sox going all the way back to 2005, 6, 7, and being, having him a part of the organization as a player and then a manager. I was, you have a personal connection. And so I really wanted him back, but I also knew that if Chaim went another direction, you have to have the top baseball operations official make the decision about the staff and the on-field manager. It's just so important, that relationship. And he made that decision and off we go. And I think they're going to be a great tandem.
So I guess the natural question just off of that is, obviously Alex was not the manager last year. He is the manager now. You know, why did he have to step down or step away for that 1 year? Why couldn't you guys have just ridden it out and had him as the manager? I mean, obviously, he still could have been suspended and retained the job of manager of the Boston Red Sox, even if he's not managing on the field. You know, why did it have to be a situation where he was no longer employed by the team and then ended up coming back?
Yeah, it's a great question. He came to the conclusion about 24 hours after the report came out, and he had conversations with Major League Baseball, that it was going to be too big of a distraction for the team, and he really needed to step away. And Chaim and I and John and Tom met with him for hours at Fenway that day, and then the next day, and had lots of conversations about it. And we all agreed that it was the right thing to part ways in the wake of what had happened, given the uncertainty and the suspension. It just made sense. I also think people do deserve forgiveness, and our fans in their own time will come to their own conclusions. I think many understand what happened there in Houston. It's been well documented. And now Alex has that second chance, and I think he treasures that second chance. And if I know him, he's not going to waste that opportunity.
Is Alex Cora the manager of the Boston Red Sox if the team doesn't finish 24-36 and in last place last year? I mean, it feels a little bit like after a last place finish, the team was in a position where not only did it need, I don't want to be disrespectful to Ron Renneke, he did the best he could, but not only did it need a championship proven manager in the dugout, but it sort of needed to sell some hope. And Alex Cora is about as good a franchise front man as you're going to find. So again, if you guys don't finish last, is it maybe you move on and just find another manager and don't go back to the last guy who was successful in the dugout?
It's a good question. Obviously hard to answer because, who knows the sort of mindset of where things would have been had we had a different season. So I honestly don't know the answer to that question. What I do know is I firmly believe that whether Alex came back to the Boston Red Sox after his suspension and after Major League Baseball cleared him to manage again, I know for sure, given his extreme talent and how great he is as a leader and the baseball IQ, he would have managed again, maybe not this year, but likely this year and potentially in another uniform. So, it's unknowable, but I'm just glad that it came together the way it did.
And I do want to point out in fairness that, you know, A.J. Hinch, the manager of that Astros team involved in the cheating scandal, he's managing this year as well. He sat out 1 year. He's with the Detroit Tigers. So it's not just Alex who's back in the game. I have to ask you about your good buddy and Brookline homie, Theo Epstein. Theo, no longer with the Chicago Cubs. He snapped that curse there, just like he did for Red Sox fans here. And now he's engaged in a number of different things, including working for Major League Baseball. What do you see in Theo's future? And the $64,000 question, do you ever see him coming back to the Red Sox? Is that something he would welcome down the line?
It's a great question. First of all, he is, you know, I think he's gone Wall Street on us. He's involved with investment funds and different investment vehicles, and he can do it all. He branches. Everyone thought politics. I'm like, no, I don't think that's going to be for Theo. Although I'll tell you, anything that guy set his mind to, he can do. I speak to him often. He's enjoying some really well-deserved family time. He's in Chicago now with the boys and Marie, and he's doing the consulting work that I mentioned. He's also importantly working for Rob Manfred. And I spoke to the commissioner about Theo and my experiences working with him and growing up with him in advance of Rob offering him and recruiting him to sort of come in and consult on a part-time basis. It's a great fit because Theo really has a great understanding of the players, obviously the game, how front offices work. And as we take baseball forward into the future, and as we emerge out of this COVID nightmare that we've all endured, I'm hopeful that he'll be able to work for Rob and Dan Halem and the team at MLB as we look to engage with the union on meaningful change to help take the game forward into the next generation. So really glad he's doing that. But I would anticipate, my guess is, and then to answer your question about the Red Sox, no, I do not see him coming back to the Boston Red Sox. You know, they say you can't go home. He can come home, but it's probably to, you know, play his guitar at a fundraiser or something. But no, he won't be coming to the Red Sox. But I would see him getting back into baseball. Absolutely. I mean, he's got a deep, deep passion for the game. And it'd be great to compete against him again. It was a lot of fun having him at another team. And when the Cubs came here to play in 2017, it was really a lot of fun. So I'd see him getting back into the game at the club level at some point. Just a question of when and where.
Between you two guys at Brookline High, the baseball player was you. You know, Theo was more of the front office guy, like, you know, keeping score. Like, you were captain of the team, right?
Yeah, I did. I think Brad Cohen did a favor and made me captain. I'm not sure how that happened, but Theo was he actually was a sneaky pitcher. He had good off speed stuff, but I do like to tease him that he was already charting statistics and calculating WAR at the end of the bench while the rest of us were out there actually playing.
Yeah, see, he had Sam Kennedy's WAR, Captain Sam Kennedy's WAR for Brookline High's baseball team. This is going to be the last one from me, and then I think Ellen has a really important question for you.
Yes.
I just want to ask you about the sort of adjustment that Major League Baseball has undergone with the minor leagues. I think a lot of folks who watch Channel 5 in the Lowell area are very curious. What is the future of professional baseball in Lowell now that the Spinners, at least for this year, are no longer an affiliate of the Boston Red Sox? Do you have any update on that or any insight you can give folks about the future of professional baseball in Lowell?
Yeah, I would just say this, nothing to sort of report on or break news, but Congresswoman Lori Trahan is an unbelievable advocate for the city of Lowell and the entire region. And she and members of our organization, along with city officials and business community in the city of Lowell, have maintained open and active dialogue with the Red Sox. And we are exploring all options as we go forward. 2021 is obviously uncertain given COVID. We've talked about potential of an Atlantic League team there. We've talked about the possibility of a Red Sox affiliate there again in the future someday. I don't want to make any commitments because we don't have any agreements in place. But we are working closely with Lowell to ensure that baseball will return, hopefully in the near future. But we'll have to see how things play out in the months ahead.
And now the most important question you'll be asked on this podcast, we saved it for last.
I'm so happy I have your ear. So my father actually used to sell Fenway Franks for his summer job. And so this is why this is so important to me. Why are foot-long Fenway Franks not available at every food stand? Only certain ones you can get the foot-longs.
That is a great question. I know the answer, and if I told you, I'd have to kill you. No, I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
That's okay.
I have no idea. That's a great question. We will look into it. I'll tell you, I went for my first job to try and get a job as a vendor at Fenway. It was Harry M. Stevens at the time. And I applied and was sent an offer letter or an acceptance letter. And then they found out I was only 14 when I showed up, and I was told, you can't work here until you're 16. So I figured out how to get a job across the street at the souvenir store. The D'Angelo family's rules and regulations weren't quite as strict as the concessionaire Harry M. Stevens. So my first summer job was selling hats across the street at Fenway. And I'll tell you, Theo was quite jealous of some of the hats I would come home and share with our Brookline High teammates.
That is great. I didn't know that. That's what a story to go from selling hats at souvenirs, which I've bought a lot of stuff from over the years, to running the place. Wow, that's quite the story, Sam.
The D'Angelo family still wants photo evidence. They don't believe it, and because they did not have an electronic payroll. We were paid in cash out of a shoebox at the end of the night.
Don't get them in trouble now.
I swear it was true. It was a great experience. And you know, you'd have sometimes players would come over to get gear for their families or kids or visiting players or whatever it was. And it was always so cool to see players come across the street. And it was just great to go to work at near a ballpark. Every day.
Well, that should be an inspiration to everybody out there. You know, anybody who's interested in baseball, where you started and where you are now. And we know you're a busy man, so we certainly appreciate the time. Sam, always great to talk to you. And thanks for sticking with us and answering some of the tough questions and some of the fun ones, too, here on the Take 5 podcast.
Great to be with you both. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate it, as always. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast so others can find it and enjoy it. And now you can email us at take5@wcvb.com. We'd love to get your feedback and hear your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.